Welcome back to the COS Business Podcast, the number one show in Colorado Springs. Today, we're sitting here with Kristen Goodwin, owner of The Delta V. And who's our highlighted sponsor for today?
We have Pinnacle Advanced Primary Care is our highlighted sponsor for today. And thank you, Travis, for introducing us to Kristen.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about your business, or a lot about it, however much you want.
Yeah, absolutely. So as my military life was coming close to retirement, I found myself really excited about the new possibilities and opportunities that were out there. And I knew that I wanted to do something that would serve others and also make a difference. And that's how I got into executive and leadership coaching. And so with my business partner, we started The Delta V, which is change in your velocity. And really what that is helping individuals or executives or those organizational teams accelerate or facilitate their transformative growth. And bottom line, like our mission is about helping those organizations and individuals really reach their full potential, either personally or professionally.
That's awesome. And I can just tell from your mannerisms, you have a military background, correct? And we did a little bit of research on you, so we know a little bit about you.
A little bit.
Yeah. Let's dive into a little bit about that, because that's really fascinating, especially with some of the things we read on. Air Force Academy grad?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. Let's talk a little bit about that. What got you into the military first and foremost? Do you come from a family of military or?
I do. And that's a great question. My dad served over 30 years in the Coast Guard and wanted me to go, you know, get into the Coast Guard Academy, follow his footsteps. My mom served as an Air Force reservist as a nurse, as a flight nurse. So I had yes, sir, and yes, ma'am on both sides. Yes, growing up.
Yeah, I've heard that the Air Force base is pretty hard to get in. Like the acceptance rates is not easy, is it?
Oh, it was it had been a dream of mine for a long time, mm-hmm. and it is pretty tough because they're not just looking at you academically; they're looking mm-hmm. at you physically, also your involvement in the community. So they're looking for somebody that's really well-rounded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are you, so you became a pilot, correct?
I did, yes.
That's really cool. Talk a little bit about like your experience with that. And of course, we'll probably tie it into Delta V because I'm sure all that experience, 32 years experience, played a role in what you're doing now. But like you have a lot of great experiences in the military and things that you've flown. And I was just reading up about you and it's awesome to have someone like you in the community. So let's talk a little bit about that.
About a pilot. Yeah. Well, I'll say that, it goes all the way back to when I was in fourth grade and I was watching, I remember very vividly, it was April 12th, 1981. I just dated myself, right? And it was then that I watched the shuttle launch and it was the Columbia.
Okay.
The Challenger was my favorite shuttle, but this story was a Columbia. Young and Gripen were the pilots of that. And I just remember watching that with my classmates. And it was just so distinctive to see that shuttle launch, you know, and just, it was just absolutely incredible and inspiring. It was then that I wanted to go to the academy mm-hmm. To follow that camaraderie, that esprit de corps that both my mom and my father had serving in the military with their colleagues. I wanted to be a pilot because I wanted to be an astronaut as well. And that mm-hmm. is kind of where it all started. And so the first step for me was going to that academy getting that engineering degree. And then I was exceptionally fortunate to be selected at a time when they weren't taking a lot of pilots mm-hmm. To go to pilot training. So I was really, really excited about that.
Mm-hmm. At a time when they weren't accepting not a lot of pilots, but also not a lot of women pilots, right?
Yes. So they're in our class, graduating class, there's about 8% women at the academy. So you kind of mentioned that. And so there weren't a lot of women going to pilot training at that time.
Mm-hmm.
That must have been you must have a chip on your shoulder to be someone who with enough grit to get through that and know those statistics, right? Did they tell you those statistics up front or were you just part of the statistics because you're kind of like one among those first women to do so, right?
I was just a young kid with a dream.
Yeah.
And I didn't pay attention to the statistics. I just tried to do the best job that I could and everything that was in front of me. Mm-hmm. And I was just really driven and determined to do the best I could and, mm-hmm. you know, reach that dream.
I'd like to take a quick moment and thank our sponsors.
Redefine mortgages.
Redefine the home buying experience with Redefine Mortgages. Custom solutions, transparent advice, and even seamless process. Mm. Start the journey to home ownership at redefinemortgages.com. That's redefinemortgages.com.
Neon Pig Creative. Bring brands to life with Neon Pig Creative. Dazzling designs and strategic marketing make businesses stand out. Spark creativity at neonpigcreative.com. That's neonpigcreative.com.
Exponential impact. Fuel startup success with Exponential Impact. Mentorship, resources, and support available to amplify impact. Mm-hmm. Join a community of change makers at exponentialimpact.com.
That's exponentialimpact.com.
Fast Signs.
Fast Signs can help you with all your signage and visual marketing needs. Whether you're starting a new business or just need a signage refresh, let Fast Signs help you. Make your statement. That's fastsigns.com.
Cars Helping Charities. Cars Helping Charities is a turnkey fundraising solution for nonprofits. Cars Helping Charities allows your nonprofit to accept vehicle donations, which are sold, and then the funds go to the organization. Mm. CHC is partnering with my nonprofit of choice, Mattersville, mm-hmm. to help them raise funds through vehicle donations. Please consider donating your car to support Mattersville. CHC will pick up any car, an old clunker you have sitting in your driveway, or a car you just don't feel like selling anymore. Make sure to visit carshelpingcharities.org. That's carshelpingcharities.org.
Now let's get back to the show.
I think every young kid, especially like young men, like I would say, like aspire to be a pilot at some point in their life. It's just like they watch Top Gun. Like there's so many cool things about being a pilot, right? You're cool. You have great vision. I knew like right out of the gate, you can't get in because of the vision, right? I'm like blind. So I knew right away. I was like, no, I can't get in. But there's a lot of stipulations too, right? To getting in the first place, not only like mental aptitude, but physical, right? For like good vision and stuff like that. Talk a little bit more about that.
Just the attributes.
Yeah.
Getting
is there physical requirements too, like running and all that too?
Yeah. But you run, you have to do push-ups, sit-ups, and, you know, for us, maybe not as for either one of you, but just pull-ups, right? We're just built a little differently, but you had to do that. And I think that for a lot of the women was one of the biggest challenges mm-hmm. was just meet that requirement. But they had a standard and you had to meet it. And that was expectation. And I like that, right? You want to move forward and be selected based on your aptitude and your ability to do a job, not because of anything mm-hmm. else. So
have you seen, there's a new movie out on Amazon with Michael Pena. And it's about being an astronaut. Like, are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
I've heard of it and I have not watched it.
It is so good. Like I've had a very similar dream as you. Like I actually still want to go to Mars actually. So I'm going to make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what's cool is with the way technology is going, I don't have to join the Air Force Academy to do it, right. You know, because I don't know if I could make that cut, but in that movie, like, it starts out him as a kid and like he has this dream that he's always wanted to do this, but he doesn't realize it until like he's older though. And like he's doing the running, like people, like it takes place in the 80s, I think, too, or something like that, maybe the 90s. And like everyone's like, why is he running? Like, and it's just, I was reading some of your story, I was like, wow, it's a very inspiring story too. But like, it's just really cool to see those connections. It was one of those movies that actually made me emotional when he actually like got into space, like, because that was like the climax of the movie. So I was like,
well, you're inspiring me to one see the movie, yeah. not give up. And yeah, you know, I'd say it doesn't matter how young we are, mm-hmm. right? You know, keep shooting for Mars. I think there's a lot of avenues to do that.
Yeah, screw forward. The moon. We're going for Mars.
That's right. I mean, bypass that, right?
Well, the moon first, actually.
Okay,
Mars.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm excited for the lunar mission. I'm excited for all this stuff. Like last month, they literally, like almost a month ago, I think, to this day, that they, like a private company, like put equipment on the moon. And like, that's just the first time in like, 50 years that we've even like tried to do that. And it was through a private company. So yeah.
Absolutely amazing. I love it.
I love the
innovation. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that's so exciting about the space industry. Is it's growing, and it's not just about the government or NASA. It's mm-hmm. about corporate America and industry getting there and everybody mm-hmm. coming together to really accelerate that technology and that innovative thought mm-hmm. and having that agility as we progress to be able to do things that we dreamed of and mm-hmm. make it reality. That's what's exciting.
Yeah. So what do you think about it was that made you want to be an astronaut? Was it the, just this big goal or what was it?
I think what it was is just that moment in mm-hmm. class. You know, we all have defining moments. Mm-hmm. It could be an individual that inspires us. It could be an act. It could be something. And just seeing, you know, that shuttle launch and, you know, I can still vividly see it. Right. And, you know, 2 minutes after launch, the SRBs or the solid rocket boosters, you know, come off of the shuttle and it just, it starts to, you know, change its trajectory yeah. and go into space. And it's just all of that. I mean, it just, seeing that power and, you know, just transitioning into another element of from Earth to space, mm-hmm. you know, something that not everybody gets to do. And it was then that I just got excited about, you know, going into space, yet I knew that there was a path to get there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my father went to the Coast Guard Academy and he goes, you could fly in the Coast Guard. I was like, Dad, but you have to be on boats, you know, to get to the planes. And I just was really passionate about the air and soaring in the skies. And so I really looked, you know, to the academy mm-hmm. And that camaraderie that my dad had with all his classmates. And I thought, you know, I don't want to be part of that as well.
What was that moment like when you flew your first plane? I'm assuming, yeah. I don't know if that was the moment for you where you're like, holy cow, like this dream is coming into fruition. I don't know if that was the moment or it was maybe a couple times after that where you actually could like maybe focus and be like, and seize the moment. Maybe you're just so focused on passing the test or whatever it might've been, but yeah, tell us a little bit about that moment for sure.
Yeah, sure. You know, I think what you're asking is about those moments where you're like, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, how did I get here? And I'm living this dream that I've had for so long. I'd say right here in Colorado Springs, as a cadet, it was 1991. I had 2 weeks of flying course and I was flying what they call the T-41. It's a Cessna 172. And after a week, only a week, they said, hey, it's time to solo. I go, what solo? Like by myself? And so we flew out to this landing strip right here in Colorado Springs. It's called Bullseye. And we flew out together and then he got out and it was another student in another plane and myself, and we flew by ourselves in the pattern. And that moment was exhilarating and scary at the same time, because as he got out and I was taxiing about to take off, I heard every noise in the plane. I thought the wheel was going to fall off mm-hmm. or the wing, you know, you just have all those fears. But that was a moment that, wow, I'm doing this and I'm doing it by myself. And you know, how did this moment come to be? It was really exciting.
Yeah, so
what did you get to fly in your career? Because I read up some cool things and I thought it'd be fun to share some of the things you get to fly. It's really inspiring for sure.
I fly a mean paper airplane. I can
yeah.
No. I you know, talking about those moments where you're just like, holy cow, how did I get here? I went on when people said that, hey, a woman can't fly, a woman can't go to combat. You know, what are you thinking? Mm-hmm. I got to go on and fly 9 different aircraft. And one of them being the B-2 stealth bomber, the B-52 bomber, the EC-130, and a whole bunch of trainers. And each one of them are exceptional and exciting in their own way. But it's, you know, those are the moments when each one of those flights and getting checked in all those planes where I sat back and said, holy cow, I'm so fortunate to be living my dream and have the opportunity to do this.
From Cessna to B-2, is B-2 the biggest one that you flew, or was it you said the EC-130? What'd you say? What was the biggest one? Because that's a big difference right there, right?
If you want to talk size, I would say the B-52.
Yeah, it's huge.
They fit inside this room?
Oh, no. No. The B-52... The wingspan, I believe, is 179 feet. I think the B-2 is 172. Mm-hmm. It's just a little
What's smaller. A good reference thing that we could like put there?
That is a great yeah.
Like a bus, right? Or like each wing is like a bus, essentially, or what?
Yeah, that maybe.
I think a bus is like 30-something.
Yeah, that's good. I should have that reference, and I don't. I don't know what that is, but it's pretty darn big.
For sure, yeah.
And the B-2 from front to back, if you have a fighter, everybody kind of has an idea of what a fighter is, Top Gun. Mm-hmm. It's 69 feet, toes to tail, although the B-2 does not have a tail, which I think is just still an aerodynamic wonder.
Wow.
You know, it's the only plane without a tail. So it's a 69 feet, you know, from front to back, and then 172, you know, wingtip to wingtip. But the B-52's longer and wider. Mm-hmm. And that plane, it was built in the 1950s. I mean, and we're still flying it. I mean, that's a testament to the technology and those engineers that were so innovative back then.
It's similar to these microphones. Michael Jackson used these microphones like in the 80s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Been around for a long time.
How about that? Yeah.
Good technology.
I was going to say these exact ones. Fantastic technology.
That's amazing though. 1950s. Like,
Right? And when I got in it, you know, I saw cobwebs that were from the 1950s. Yeah. <y'all>
Was that the Skunk Works whole program? Is that what I'm hearing? Or is that the SR-70?
That's it. SR-71.
Okay.
Yeah.
And again, something that was like, I think that was like 60s or 70s, I think, and just unbelievable marvel of an airplane even today.
Yes.
Unbelievable what these planes could do. And so like you flying those, I'm assuming there's probably another one of those moments of like, holy cow, look what I'm doing now. And just like the level of training and trust that goes into someone like you for them to give you something like that worth, I don't know how much money that's worth, but probably something insane. And it's just...
That's a million, maybe?
Yeah, maybe like 100 million, maybe something like that. Probably something crazy, right? So that's... Well,
they only made 21 B-2s.
Oh, okay.
And when you make 21 of anything,
scarcity.
They kind of get expensive, right? If you make more of them, you know, the price goes down. So it's a $2.2 billion aircraft. And so, you know, that weighs heavily on... There's only two pilots.
Mm-hmm.
And so that weighs heavy on us, the responsibility. Mm-hmm. Not only that you're flying one of 21... now there's 20. That's a whole nother story. That's a lot to ensure that you're doing the mission right, but you're also bringing that home safely.
Did that missing one happen through like a crash? I think I might have heard about that.
It did. Okay. There was a crash. It was they were deployed to Guam, which we did a lot of deployments there, and it was actually that their tour was complete. And so it was a two ship of B-2s. It was the second one. And it had rained a lot that night. And in Guam, it was a rainy season. And one thing, you know, you learn the water had gotten into the system and it's an electronic jet. Mm. And the engineers and maintenance came up and, you know, did what they thought they needed to do. Yet the computer didn't take all the inputs correctly. So when it got on the runway and started going down the runway, it thought it was going 20 knots faster, or miles an hour, if you want to say like in a car, faster than it was. And so when it rotated, it instantly went into a stall because it was going slower than it actually was. And so the pilots were trying to fly it, and it got to a point where the computers took over. And it was a matter of seconds, and they ejected. Everybody was fine.
Okay, good.
Yet the plane wasn't. Mm-hmm. And so that's okay because pilots were fine.
And you can
make
another one. Maybe. I don't know. If they could, then maybe. Why haven't they? You know?
That's what happened. Yeah. And I happened to be in Hawaii working for the Pacific Commander. And I heard about it right away and went in and I had to brief him that... It's funny. It was serendipitous. I just happened to be the one to have to brief him on what was going on because I knew the plane and happened to be right there. So,
did you hear about what happened today at with the freight ship?
Yes, it's horrible.
Baltimore, yeah.
In Baltimore, the electricity shut out on that boat, right? Like a couple times, and like they just did. That thing is so massive. Like that's crazy. I've always had fear going on bridges, like
it, something like that.
Yeah.
Like that's crazy. Yeah.
Kudos to the crew, though, that realized something was wrong, alerted people, and they were able to you know, prevent more people from being on the bridge.
We're going to take a quick break and thank our sponsors.
Pinnacle Advanced Primary Care. Skip the healthcare hassle with Pinnacle Advanced Primary Care. Direct primary care for a simple monthly fee, putting health first. No insurance needed. Experience personalized care that's as unique as every individual. Visit PinnacleAPC.com to learn more. That's PinnacleAPC.com.
Franchise Succeed. Grow any business with Franchise Succeed. From development to expansion, turning small businesses into national brands through franchising. Start scaling up with a free consultation at franchisesucceed.com today. That's franchisesucceed.com.
Planet Duct. Breathe easier with Planet Duct, Colorado Springs' premier air duct cleaning service. Powerful vacuum trucks rid homes of allergens and dust. Clear the air by visiting planetduct.com. That's planetduct.com.
Epic eyewear. Elevate style with Epic eyewear. Innovative designs meet unmatched quality, ensuring a great look and better vision. Discover your next pair of shades at epiceyewear.com. That's epiceyewear.com, spelled E-P-O-C-H, eyewear.com.
And we're running a special discount right now, Andrew. It's COSBP15 for 15% off your
15% off your freaking order at epiceyewear.com. We're wearing the sunglasses right now. If you're watching, listening on the audio, definitely check out the video so you can see and check out how epic they are. E-P-O-C-H.
Eyewear.com.
Eyewear.com.
Now we will get back to this episode. Let's talk about some moments while you were in the military during your career. There was a lot of moments just in history, right? You had September 11th that happened while you're in the military, and so many other ones after that, of course. Tell us a little bit about those experiences, as much as you want, of course, but like, I'm sure those shaped you and where you were when they happened, because even us as civilians, we remember where we were
right
when those moments happened. So maybe give our viewers a little bit more of a lens of like your side of the table and like what that experience was like as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So might, you know, try to keep this as truncated as possible, yet it was one of those moments. I think anybody, you know, that was alive at that time knew exactly where you were and what you were doing.
I do.
And there's a whole generation that doesn't, right?
Oh yeah,
and
I didn't think about that.
I'll paint the picture of, to answer your question. I just left the Pentagon and was selected, you know, into the B-2 program. So went to Whiteman Air Force Bases, which is the only base that the B-2s are housed or live, right? So all of them are there. So there I am, and I'm starting B-2 training October 1. So I'm real excited. And until then, I get to fly these really cool little jets called a T-38. They used to be the Thunderbirds. You guys are familiar with the Thunderbirds?
Oh, yeah.
They used to be the jets that they flew, right? So fast, it's fun. So I'm flying that around, and I was the first woman on the base to fly. So a lot of the security guys knew me coming in and out of the base, right? And I'll come back to that in a second. So it's September 11th, and my colleague said, "Hey, come with me. We're going to go to the tower early in the morning around 8 o'clock, because I want you to watch the response to a nuclear generated exercise." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Okay, that'd be great." So we're at the tower around 8 o'clock, and he says, "So you have all the air crew in this alert shack," and you could see the shack. And he said, "Here are all of the hangars with the B-2s in them." And I said, "Okay." And he goes, "What's going to happen is there's going to be this giant voice, really loud on the base, and it's going to give this code word, and it's going to say it really loud, and that's going to alert, you know, the air crews to report to aircraft as soon as possible and await, you know, further instructions." I'm like, okay, that's really cool, right? So I'm just all excited for this to happen. As soon as he explains it, sure enough, the giant voice gets on there, and they go, and the code word, unclassified, by the way, is klaxon, klaxon, klaxon. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh my gosh. And you see all the air crew run out of this shack, get in their cars, and they're going to the respective hangars. And at the same time, the hangar doors, if you can just visualize this, just open up. And you see, if you've ever seen a B-2, it is just this incredible sight of air power. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I like have goosebumps. I'm like, I get to fly that, I hope, soon. And so they all run in there. And I said, now what happens? They go, well, they're going to read in, you know, different codes, and they're going to decide what they have to do next, either taxi or shut down, blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay, that's great. So right after that, it's about 8:25.
9/11.
And I go to the gym because they're doing exercise. You can't really fly. And so I'm going to the gym. And as soon as I walk in the gym, all those security guys that I've gotten to know over the last couple months, I said, hey, ma'am, you're a pilot, right? And I said, yeah. I go, what? They go, come with me. And they took me to the TV. And one of the Twin Towers was on fire. And they said it was a plane. And I go, well, that's odd. It's really, you know, it's nice out, you know, no weather.
Clear day.
It's not, you know, in the pattern like that. Mm-hmm. That's not where they would normally fly. And as we were talking, the second plane hit the other tower. Mm. And we all sat there in just disbelief. And within a minute, I can't believe I'm saying this, they had beepers, right? I mean, a lot of people don't know what beepers are, but they had beepers and it went off. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is for real. And the moment that a lot of people don't know is our whole military, the triad of the military at that moment, that means the Navy submarines, mm-hmm. the missiles, you know, underground, and the bombers were all poised with nuclear weapons because of this exercise. The timing was mm-hmm. just, we couldn't redo that. Mm-hmm. So we were all poised for a nuclear war, exercise, of course, mm-hmm. at that moment. And everybody was on pause. Because now what do you do? What was the next potential, you know, terrorist attack, if there was going to be one? Mm-hmm. And the Joint Chiefs had to make the decision, do we launch all the B-2s or do we keep them there? And so that's a little bit about where I was that day. Mm-hmm. And as a young airman, what I learned is no matter what you're doing, if you're in the military or if you're in corporate America, the importance of knowing how to do your job and knowing how to do it well, because you never know when that moment's going to strike. Mm-hmm. So,
were you at the Pentagon? Where did you say you were?
Before that, you said you were right at
the Pentagon. I was at the Pentagon mm-hmm. before, but I was at Whiteman Air Force Base okay. in Missouri with the B-2s mm. on that exact moment. Yeah. So I saw everybody respond.
Where's Whiteman at? I'm from Missouri.
It's in Missouri. It's Warrensburg.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's about 45 minutes from Kansas City.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
That's where he's from. Yeah.
Yeah, you are.
Yep.
Yeah. Small world.
Yeah. Are you from Kansas City? Or are you just...
No.
Okay.
Oh, boy. I moved 26 times in my life.
As soon as I said that, I was like, oh, yeah, both of your parents were in the military.
Yeah. That's okay. Yeah. That's okay.
Because I know in the military, you're usually moving around a lot.
Yeah, we did.
You're pretty much... The whole United States is where you're from.
that I said wherever I put my boots yeah, is where exactly. I'm from. So yes, yeah. Yeah. And they've landed here.
Yep.
Not moving.
Yeah, it's a pretty nice place to be.
It is an exceptional place. Yeah, I love it. Yes.
Well, we have a lot of mountains in Colorado. When I was reading up about you, there was an instance I think I read about you flying with an engine that went out or something of that sort.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that experience too. Yeah. Oh my goodness. I was looking at that and I was like, holy cow, that must be... I can't only imagine like what the obviously there's protocols for that, but unpack that for us. I want to hear about that story as well.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So I think the story you're referring to is when I was flying over in Bosnia, mm-hmm. at the time I was flying the 130. And, so we're deployed flying combat missions over there. And when you fly, you have what's called a hard crew, which means you fly with the same people, throughout your deployment. And so there was about 13 people on the crew, and I was the mission commander, and I had just received a brand new co-pilot. And so he just got checked out, flew over to Bosnia, and his first flight being checked out was in combat. So that's to kind of set the stage. We also had a navigator, an engineer, and then we had... we did command and control in the back of the plane, and we had some Army guys because we were helping our service men on the ground confiscate a surface-to-air missile from the enemy. So that kind of sets the stage. So here we are, we're flying, and very important mission. We have the Army guys there for a reason. We have to make sure we're taking care of the team on the ground. And as we're flying, one of the engines catch on fire. Now look out. Okay. And one thing as a pilot, when you're in front and you have the guys in the back, they're relying on you mm-hmm. to keep them safe. And so your voice, and if you get excited, kind of tells them, you know, if everything's going to be okay or not. And so very long story short, you know, the co-pilot brand new was like, oh my gosh, you know, we read about this stuff. We studied this stuff, but here we are. And he, you know, he was brand new. And so we definitely had a pull together as a team, had the, you know, navigator come up and kind of overlook the over the shoulder of the co-pilot and the engineer. And I started taking care of the fire. And then at the same time, we had another compounded emergency where mm-hmm. we lost air compression. And so we all had to go on oxygen. And we still weren't done with the mission. So mm-hmm. we're trying to stay there to take care of what needed to be done. And as that's going on, and we're looking at not only electronics, but the hydraulics, we start having a problem with a second engine. And if we lost another engine, we wouldn't be able to go over the mountains to get out of Bosnia. Hmm. So I'm thinking, where are we going to land mm-hmm. if that happens? Which it's, you're in a combat zone. So there's a lot going on there. So very long story short, we finished the mission. We're able to take care of the emergency. We get over the mountains and we're flying back to Aviano Air Base. That's where we were flying in and out of. And as we were doing it, you know, one of our standards were to make coffee. You said you like coffee.
Yeah.
So we made, the engineer would make some Starbucks coffee, and he also put in some Spunkmeyer cookies. And so it smelled like home. So mm-hmm. everybody knew we were going to be safe and we're going home. Yet we still didn't have an engine mm-hmm. and we still had some other problems.
He's making coffee in the jet?
Yeah. Okay. In the 130, you can do that.
Okay.
You know, other planes, not so much.
Yeah.
And so we did that. And the Army guys were sitting on the bunk going, oh, this must not be a serious thing okay. because they're drinking coffee and we're all eating cookies. And so we landed safely. We got greeted by all the emergency, response vehicles. But when the Army guys turned in their gear to life support, they said, how was the flight? And they were kind of relaying everything that happened. And the life support airman was like, oh my gosh, that was pretty serious. They go, oh, we didn't think anything of it because, yeah, we were eating cookies and having mm-hmm. coffee and, you know, we got back safely and they weren't making a big deal about it. So that's just one of the stories, but it was really a crew effort and making sure we took care of the mission on the ground and, mm-hmm. and took care of everybody in the sky.
How does that apply to what you're doing now with Delta V, the Delta V?
The Delta V?
Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, I think all of our experiences in life kind of shape who we are and really help us to be just better personally and professionally. Mm-hmm. And so with leadership coaching, executive coaching, you could take all these lessons and the journey that I've had in the 32 years of the military and in life and apply that and help others reach their full potential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, not to mention like just being calm under extreme pressure, right? Yeah. Like that's insane. And a lot of that I'm sure is your directive because you're in command, right? Mm-hmm. For that mission. But like, we were talking about this on another episode. I'm trying to remember like a couple of weeks ago, but it was like, when you go through situations like that, like I feel like when you get transitioned back into civilian life, sometimes I feel like the problems are probably not as crazy as like, hey, I was flying a plane with an engine fail and the second one was trying to give out on me at the same time. And there was a whole bunch of issues. Mm-hmm. Like that's a crazy problem. And I think your training, it attributes to your training, right? And to know what to do under any circumstance. But like, I'm assuming that like staying calm under pressure is just one of your MOs, what you've garnered from the military, right?
Yeah, I absolutely. I think definitely just try to stay even, I guess, as mm-hmm. I've always been. Don't get really excited. You know, I have a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old and, you know, things happen and I'm just like, okay. You know, it's just, you just take it in stride. Mm-hmm. And I do, it's funny, you mentioned the military. When something happens, I go, well, bullets aren't flying over my head, so I think we're okay. You know, yeah. You just kind of give it, grounding, put in perspective and just say, okay, take a deep breath, whatever it is, mm-hmm. and let's just move through it and figure out, mm-hmm. you know, the best way to address whatever situation it is. So,
yeah, and you had a mission too. So it's like, I was just thinking like, you know, even in business, you have a mission, you have things that are going wrong. Mm-hmm. You still should focus on the mission, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. The, you know, it's good to have a mission and a purpose and a team around you that is also united in what that focus is. Yeah.
So how has that transition been with these? It sounds like you work mostly with executive leadership, C-suite level people. So a lot of leaders in the business world. How has that transition been for you? It's been about 2 years, right? Since you've been out of the military. Let's talk a little bit about that, because that's pretty interesting as well.
Yeah. So it has been 2 years, a little over 2 years. And, you know, I had a very unique military experience. I didn't just fly. I had the opportunity to work as a political advisor for the Pacific. So I got to travel to the Pacific, and I helped the Pacific commander actually advise him on different situations and strategy. I worked in the Thai embassy. I worked in a think tank in Colorado and in DC, and you know, worked on Capitol Hill and the Pentagon 4 times. So having that experience gives you a breadth of understanding of different cultures, of different work environments, companies as well, and expertise, and really just value what everybody brings to the table, wherever you are. And so transitioning, I take that experience, right? Valuing everybody, valuing the diversity in thought and perspective and skill sets. And I take that and transition it into kind of the civilian world and that perspective.
Well, I know at scale, because I've dealt with a lot of businesses of medium size, at least, a lot of the biggest things that they find themselves butting their head up against is systems and processes and being prepared, preparation, whether that's a meeting or a podcast interview or whatever it might be. And like, what better background do you have, you know, Pentagon, being in DC, all the things that you've done and offering those specific things to these businesses? Because at some point in a business, they have to have those in place, or they're just not going to grow, or they're going to implode. And so have you had some experiences implementing those specific things into a lot of the clients that you have now?
Yeah, absolutely. I work with a CEO that was really trying to transform the business after 50 years. That means rebranding, policies, procedures, and just working on the culture. So those are a lot of different elements. Sometimes you just address one. Maybe if it's just, hey, policies, procedures, or hey, I need to rebrand. But you know, they wanted to look at the whole totality of all of that. And and so that's just one example. Going in and just sitting back, gathering the data, and really helping them see a new vision and a way forward. So they optimize, who they are and their mission.
Yeah, I know that right out of the gate. As far as like any business that has their, you know, I don't want to cuss, but shit together, like they have those in place, like you said. Like those are the ones that scale up. One of our past guests, we always mention them, High Five Plumbing. They're a plumbing service, but they make $2 million a month. It's insane. And we went to go visit, and Andrew actually helped them set up their own podcast studio because they're covering all the bases.
Which they released an episode today, and it was out of angle.
that's right
that's what I say,
but their processes were just unbelievable. And you look at this, I used to work at a very high-end marketing agency, and it was like a Google type of like environment, and this plumbing company was like a Google type of environment. You walk in and there's like
it's amazing, their
manifesto on the wall, or like a mural talking about whatever the core competencies, and you're like, plumbing company, right? Like this is crazy. They have a localized warehouse with cubbies full of tools, and then they have their own external warehouse, right?
Yeah, bigger warehouse.
Bigger warehouse, and they have like a convenience store inside this new headquarters as well. And it's just like, that's what we're talking about when you really have it all together and the systems are talking to the processes and everything's starting to really mesh together and everybody has a plan. It, like in the military, like in theory, at least, like you join and you have like a map of like, okay, if you do these things, here's where you're going to be in X amount of years, right?
Absolutely.
That's how they are over there. And it's like, that's, you talk about impact and significance and all those different things. Like you said, you, there was a mission, right? For a lot of the employees from the first day, they know if they do the right thing and they excel, where they're going to be placed in the future of the company. And I think that's just so important. And it's so cool that you're able to implement, you know, some of those with the Delta V. It's just, it's awesome to see what the other side of that looks like. Because for us, like anybody could be a business owner, right? And so we all start at different places. And, you know, I've dealt with a lot of veterans. I love working with them because that is something that has been inherent in them. And I don't want to say beat into them, but you know what I mean? Like they know their stuff as far as that's concerned, no matter what branch, you know, I don't want to talk too much crap on the Army, but yeah, even they know. So,
well, my hat's off to that, that company. Cause if you get the fundamentals right, then everything else will fall into place. And you have employees that love where they work. They have a good culture. They help each other out. You have a good mission, and then the customers know what it is, and they have pride around what they do every single day. And, what an exciting thing if you can take care of your people, execute the mission, and have pride in what you do, and you know, move forward and be successful. Yeah.
Yeah. Go check out that episode. It's High Five Honey.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. That's fantastic.
So talk to us about like taking on a new client, what that looks like, what you're looking for. Is there a consultation meeting and kind of work through the process of like the services you offer a client?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's definitely a get to know you kind of meeting because it could be an individual, it could be a team. It also could be a company, like working with a CEO that has a vision for the company. And so you definitely have to just sit down, and it's all about what the customer is looking for and how to shape that to meet their needs. And so that duration can be, you know, 2 months. It could be 6 months. It could be a year, you know, whatever they're looking for. It could be, you know, I've done some board retreats as well. You could do a board retreat with a group, right? Yeah. But then you that can transition to working with them individually as well. And so it really, you know, to answer your question, it just really depends. It's really, you know, talking to the client and seeing the art of possible, and then, you know, together, working together to make that all action.
That's awesome. And do you have like a background? Because a lot of that is sales, right? And because you're getting to know, you're breaking ice with a potential team, client, customers, or whatever, CEO, whatever it might be, like you're getting to know them. So you're building some rapport, right? And so you're getting intel, right? Of like some of their needs and different things. Then you're kind of fitting, you know, what services that you can potentially sell them back or offer them back, right? And so I don't know if you've had too many different experiences of that, but walk us through like one specifically that you worked with in the past so we can kind of have a better understanding of your services, and we have that out there.
Yeah, I don't have a background in sales.
Okay,
But you know, I you know, because I came from the military, right?
Yeah.
So just being a servant leader, right? But definitely have an understanding of getting to know people. I think that's important. If it was, you know, when I was a wing commander, you have to know the community leaders. You have to know the people that are on the base and work with them. So I think that's just really the big thing is somebody calls and you sit down and you just really assess what they're looking for. What are their needs? And, you know, from there, you build out a plan, much like you were talking about that one organization, right? A plumbing, you know, how can we help achieve your end result and how long? And so you just kind of have to lay that out together and then take action. And sometimes as you go down that process, you know, things can adjust and you just be very fluid and agile with the customer because it's all about them. Yeah.
Talk about culture. You've mentioned it a couple times already during our interview. So is that very important to you? Like, obviously it's important, right? But talk about like your experience. I'm sure with the military, culture's built into you as well, right? But how is that important in the business world as well?
Well, culture is something that I've been thrown into situations several times where there needed to be a culture change or assistance in leading an organization a certain direction. And I don't know how I had that wonderful opportunity, but culture is something that I found that, you know, there's not a timestamp on it. You know, some people say if you Google it, hey, it takes about 5 years. Well, in one situation, we were able to move through it in the military 18 months, you know, in others, 6 months. And so culture is really important because—
What do you mean it takes time?
Sorry?
What do you mean it takes time, like to build?
It takes time sometimes to build. Okay. It takes time to change, right? Say you have a toxic culture or you have a really laissez-faire culture and they're not meeting standards and not paying attention to it because they've gotten lazy, right? Or you get this toxic where it's way too stringent and they're too hard on people and it just people are scared to come to work. I had both at the same base and to bring them together. And so that's leadership. And so there's not a blueprint for that because mm-hmm. every situation is different. And so culture is so important. And as a commander, my priorities have always been people, mission, then pride. And I kind of mm-hmm. talked about that a little earlier, but that talks to the culture. You take care of the people because they're the most valuable asset that we have. And they're the creative, they're so inspiring, right? And they're the engine in what we do, and that's the mission. And if you don't have the right people with the right culture and the right focus, then you can't do that very important mission. If it's in the military or if it's in corporate America, and then having pride in what you do, that's part of the culture. That having that pride in wearing the uniform, pride in coming to work, doing your podcast, right? Being excited about it and say, this is who we are. You know, that pride is really important. And so culture, I think, is really what drives us. It inspires us and motivates us, you know, to come to work, to be innovative, to create the new widget, if that's, you know, what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if you're in the military, serve your country, you know, just that culture. And mm-hmm. so, as you mentioned, you know, different services have different cultures, right? If it's the Navy, the Army, the Air Force, the Space Force, or the Coast Guard, I mean, all of them, you know, the Marines, you know, everybody has a different culture, mm-hmm. but it's super important, either in the military or in corporate America, right? I mean, my hat's off again. You use that example of the plumber, right? That he has a good culture and they mm-hmm. have a good model that anybody would want to be a part of, mm-hmm. right? Be excited about.
That is so true. The agency I worked at was all about culture. I mean, we had our own vernacular. Right. We had our own whatever it might be, right? It's like the military, right? Your own vernacular. We were prideful because we were the best and we knew we were the best. And mm-hmm. so we upheld ourselves as the best. And that meant work your ass off, you know, right. but also play your ass off once the job gets done. Mm-hmm. And there's something to be said about that, right? Like when you're immersed in an actual really good, like it's almost like you can talk about it, but it's also like if you haven't experienced a great culture, it's hard to define, you know, for yourself yeah. at least. And so once you are a part of something like that, it's like, man, I just had a recent, because I have a couple businesses, but with my marketing agency, I had to remind myself more recently of like, I need to have more fun. Like I'm too serious about things right now. And I need to have some fun. You know, I need to like, whatever it might be, I need to kid around or whatever needs to be done. But like, there's something to be said about just like enjoying what you're doing, you know? And I love how you have what those different pillars, the people, the mission, the pride. I love that. And they kind of, it is like almost like a circle. I know it's kind of like a step process, what you're talking about, but it's kind of like a circle of like, yeah. once you have all those things together, something's really important ticking for any business, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's really cool for Delta V. So did we ever talk about like what that stands for, Delta V? I don't know if we did,
no,
right?
No, we haven't.
Yeah.
So I might be a little geek, you know. It's physics, right? Mm-hmm. It's Delta V is change in velocity.
Mm-hmm.
And came up with that because, you know, I wasn't sure what I was going to do after I got out of the military. But, you know, you definitely can change your velocity in so many things. If it's your vision, if it's your leadership, if it's how you approach whatever's in front of you, you can change your velocity. And so...
And velocity is the speed at which you're going?
Yeah. It's an impulse. You need, you know, Delta V is you need this impulse to mm-hmm. ignite that change.
Mm-hmm.
And so in all of us, we have our moments where we need to have something ignite us to shift where our trajectory is going. Mm-hmm. If it's, hey, the podcast, right? We want to, you know, shift it to go this way
mm-hmm.
or, you know, some of the things we were talking about before or your company or, you know, maybe you have aspirations, you know, athletically to go do something or climb all the 14ers in Colorado, right? Mm-hmm. You want to change your velocity and in some way, that's what Delta V stands for.
It's a cool way to say pivot.
Pivot, yeah. Yeah. With yeah. a little,
I like it.
You
yeah.
know, a little... ignition in there, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Some force, ignite it. Yeah. yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I love that. So yeah. So it's physics. That's what mm-hmm. it is. It's right here. Okay. Just a little Delta V.
I thought that was Space Force.
Well.
No. It's Delta V.
Delta V. That's okay because I love the Space Force. Yeah. I had the opportunity to work with them from the very beginning.
Yeah.
The last 2.5 years of my career. Helped stand up U.S. Space Command right here in Colorado Springs with General Raymond.
I got to
be the chief of staff for him. And then
That's
he said, come on over mm-hmm. and December of 2019, I believe it was, stood up, the Space Force, mm-hmm. and I got to work with Space Operations Command and help design and build that with General Whiting, who is now the new commander mm-hmm. at U.S. Space Command. Fantastic yeah. leaders, incredible mission. I mm-hmm. wish I was 20 years old all over again.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous of those guys and gals that get to go out there and.
But that's why SpaceX exists, So yeah. so if you do, maybe you can't do it in the military, but maybe you could do it privately.
Right. I guess you and I have have something in the future, right? You're gonna. Yeah, exactly. I'll veer off to the moon, and you can go to Mars.
That right? sounds like a plan. Yeah. There you go. No, I love that the logo. That's like inspired kind of from the Space Force a little bit, and yeah. Space Force, to be honest, kind of looks like Star Trek. So
it does.
their logo.
But what? It's all good.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think it's fantastic. They have their own. They're building their own culture. We were just talking mm-hmm, about culture, right? Mm-hmm. They're building their own culture. They're guardians. And it's just an exciting time. It's exciting. Yeah. And I'm excited for them, mm-hmm. as they grow and redefine who they are and move forward. It's a very exciting time. But
it is.
Yeah. Delta V kind of came from physics and Space Force. So
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good to have a good meaning behind your logo, I think.
Thank you.
I think it puts that passion behind it that makes you, and what we've talked about a lot on this podcast is that in order to stick through the hard times in business, you have to have that passion, because if you don't have that passion, you're going to not want to do it.
Absolutely. Because we're all going to hit speed bumps.
Oh, yeah.
Or hit the potholes of life, mm-hmm. right? And we're going to learn through all of them. But yeah, definitely mm-hmm. that passion, the vision inside of all of us is what drives us forward. So,
yeah. You look like someone who's a product of really great leadership. Just giving you this observation right now. And you seem like a great leader as well. Military leadership, right? What do you take from like military leadership as you transition to business and the leaders in the business world? I'm assuming there's some similarities there, but what differences are there as well?
Oh, that's a solid question.
Yeah.
I think, it kind of goes back to my priorities, right? That I had since I was a commander for the first time. If you're a commander in the military, or if you're a CEO of a company, or director or vice president in a company, right, you got to take care of your people. And I think that's just something as a leader, you have to have the ability to actively listen. You have to, you don't have to do anything. Let me say that. Mm-hmm. But some things that I've seen is empowering your employees to be innovative, and to execute that mission that you gave them, right? Because you never know if somebody has been in a company for 2 weeks or 2 years or 20 years, that the age doesn't matter. It's the ideas. And it's allowing those employees to really be creative and to listen to them, because mm-hmm. it's the collective thoughts and inputs that really make a company move forward. So leadership is, of course, integrity. It's empowering. It's taking care of the people, and it's having the responsibility to set the process and procedures of the mission, right? Mm-hmm. You do have to give some guidelines. The companies that I've worked for or with that I've had kind of ad hoc and not had, I'm not saying you have to be so structured like the military, not at all, mm-hmm. but you do have to have some boundaries in there. And those that had that allowed the employees the room to kind of know, what expectations were and how to move forward. So mm-hmm. I think those are some similarities or some good milestones to kind of have as you're, whatever you're doing. If you're working for a small business or a bigger business, take care of people. The mm-hmm. mission will get done. Yeah.
That's a great, great lesson for sure.
Yeah.
Let's talk failures. Hmm. It can be either one, right? Military or in business, but talk a little bit about, because I feel like a person's really defined by how they react during their failures, right? We can all do very well when everything's going great for us, but like, how do we react when shit's hitting the fan and, everything seems to be going wrong and your team's looking at you to be the leader and engine's failed, how do you react through a situation like that? So have you, especially now, in the business world, have you had instances of a failure, and then how have you reacted to that? And maybe some learning lessons as well.
I am an imperfect human. I fail all the time. Mm-hmm. And I approach it with, you know, every speed bump that you hit is an opportunity. I say it's a gift and opportunity to learn, to grow, and be better. If you don't take those moments where you trip and you fall and you scrape your knee or you hit rock bottom, and reflect and say, oh my gosh, how can I be better? How could I have approached it better, or assessed it, or what lesson can I learn from this? You know, that's where you're not going to grow. It's really, that's where you grow. I've had so many flights where the most important part of the flight, I mean, you have to prepare, you have to fly, but the most important is the debrief. Those that didn't debrief are missing out on the opportunity to grow, because that's where the growth happens. And so there have been many flights, there have been many leadership instances in the military and outside, yeah, that I didn't do things perfectly because I'm a flawed human. But I look at it, I should say, yet I look at it as opportunities to learn from and just try to, you know, do better the next time. And so, you know, that's how I look at it.
That's good. Yeah. And especially like, you don't want to hang on it too long and say it's a big mistake and, you know, maybe it's a lesson you relearned, but you made the same mistake again. Right. I think in life we do that too, right? We're like, learn that lesson, never going to make that mistake again, whether it's everything in life, personal life, right? Like dating the certain personality type or like something in the military or whatever it might have been, like something you knew, but then you're like, I don't know what the universe or if you're religious, God, like whatever is trying to tell me here, but I've learned this. I thought I learned this lesson, right?
Yeah.
And so I think there's something to be said about like not hanging on to things, even if it's a repeat mistake, right? I mean, and when you're talking to a lot of these, you know, these business folks that you're talking to, I'm sure that's probably the same case, right? Where they're learning lessons that maybe they just need someone who's outside the forest, right? Who's looking from bird's eye view to be like, you already know this stuff, but here, I'm not in this situation. Let me give you my perspective. Has that been some of the situations too?
Yeah, absolutely. There's something that I'll share that I think we all have what's called saboteurs, people that try to sabotage us, right? You have that voice and they're like, hey, I'm not good enough. I can't do this podcast. I can't apply for that job, you know, or I don't look good enough or whatever it is, right? It's those voices in our head. And so, you know, working with some clients is identifying what has shaped us, what events from childhood or through life experience has shaped us to where we are. And those voices as saboteurs might cause us to avoid things, to be overcritical, and they prevent us from being our very best because we're listening too much. And so, you know, working with different clients, you have to be able to identify, you know, maybe where we are and where we want to go and what's getting in the way. Sometimes there's little barriers and it could be those voices that are those barriers, right? And just having the courage to work through that and look at, you know, those missteps, as you said, right? Or those failures, however you want to put that. Again, as gifts and opportunities to learn from, to grow from, and you know, to really see the fruits of what can come after that. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what. I'm living my best life right now, and it hasn't always been a rainbows and unicorns, right? I've hit rock bottom. That's a whole nother podcast. Yet, I would never change any experience that has led me to this point because of where I am. I have a beautiful family, great, amazing friends. I love the business, love this community, and, you know, like I said, I'm living my best life. So I wouldn't change anything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's something that I have the opportunity to share with some clients and help them through those moments so they don't get stuck. Mm-hmm. So
that's a great lesson. And I think it's so hard for us to realize that in the moment of like rock bottom, right? You're like, I don't know how I'm going to move forward after. I can't even see tomorrow, let alone, you know, next year, whatever the future might look like when you're in the middle of the muck. Mm-hmm. And it's so good. I mean, a lot of our viewers will probably be listening to this and they might be going through a situation. A lot of them are business owners or whatever. They're going through a really hard time. They just don't know. Like, whatever it is, like, you make it through. We somehow make it through every time. And there's a beauty to that. And most people I know who've had a great or just a career in itself and looking back, they're like, I wouldn't change anything. Even the crazy stuff, even the mistakes, even all that stuff. It's part of my story. I'm here now because of all those decisions, right? So it's just it's part of our story, you know. Yes. And in Christianity, we say it's our testimony. It's like, this is where, this is what made me, put me in the spot that I am today to make the decisions and confirm who I am today. Right. And so that's really beautiful. And you have a very, very, very amazing career. And thank you so much for coming on our show. This has just been such a great perspective. And before we land this plane, no pun intended, that's your camera right there. Oh. Where can we find you? Anything you want to say, put your phone number. No, I'm kidding. Anything you want to give to the camera right there,
social security number.
Yeah.
So if you want to change your velocity, you can go to thedelta-v.com and love to sit down with you and help you change your trajectory. Thank you guys.
All right. Very
much. Well, sweet. Yeah, this has been a great episode. It's an honor to have you on, and we'll see you guys on the next one.
Thank you.
That was good. That was awesome.
All right.
A lot of great learning lessons there.